Ira. Shalom.
Good evening, Ira. Shalom. You're the only one. Do you have any particular questions you want to ask?
Not yet.
Okay.
Oh, can
hello,
you hear
hello.
Me now?
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Do you have any questions for tonight?
Well, I sort of do.
Oh, good. Let's give it another minute or two. I don't expect a lot of people tonight, but...
Okay.
At least we'll have the recording. Ira, are you still on? I think he is. Well, Hannah, why don't you go ahead with your question?
Okay, well, it's more, I'd like your opinion, I guess. You know how you tell us that when we change ourselves, we change the world? And, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years, we really have spent a lot of time with Teshuva, with Shogavim, especially not last year, but the year before. Well, it seemed like it was weeks after weeks after weeks. But I'm wondering if that isn't why it's because of what we did for ourselves as well as for the world, especially America. At least that was my intent when I was doing it. Could that be why we're seeing all this sexual improprieties right now? Sexual harassment cases. I mean, it's like an epidemic right now on TV.
Correct.
Okay.
So your question is, because we did the work in Shovavim, that the individuals are being reported, that women are gaining the strength to come forward and express their outrage even after 40 years and so forth? Is that the question?
Basically, yes.
And the answer is, of course.
Okay.
There's really no doubt that when you change yourself, you change the world. And the world is changing. Well, there's also a level of, there needs to be a quantum consciousness. There needs to be a quantum level of the number of people, a critical mass of the number of people doing that change. And then it will impact the world in very direct measure. So when you change yourself, you are changing the world, even if nobody else changes. Because each human being has an aspect of you within themselves. They have a connection to you because everybody is unified.
Right.
But that connection of an individual to somebody in China or somebody in China to somebody in America, that connection is there, but it's very limited in its strength. But when you reach the critical mass, which is one of the foundations of the quantum math and the atomic bombs, the hydrogen bombs, when you reach a certain critical mass, there's no stopping it. And it's an explosion. So what is happening? Well, you see the forces of the negative system striving to protect their worldview that they've done nothing wrong. Because for how many centuries have women been dominated by the men? But I just read a very short verse, and I didn't have time to look at it. It's from Jeremiah. And the English translation that I read was, or is, that women will encircle the man.
I read that today.
Yeah, it was on the Chabad email for the day.
Well, this was my
friend.
And
I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
That's okay. I have a friend who lives in Texas, not one that's part of our group or one of my students. But about a year ago, she asked me for a lot of my lessons, which I sent her. And she was supposed to send me some things that she's doing with Rosh Kodesh Ladies Group. And I don't know, I got a message from Facebook, which I just don't have time for Facebook. But for some reason, I got a message saying that she had posted something. And so I went to look, and it was pictures of her Rosh Kodesh group. So I wrote her a note. I didn't want to sound ugly, you know. You were supposed to send me these a year ago, something, you know. And I sent you my files, and you didn't send me yours. And, I was as nice as I could and said it in a polite way that maybe she had forgotten or, like me, busy all the time. And she sent me two files of her Rosh Kodesh meetings that she basically leads. And she had it in one of the two. I didn't get to read them real thoroughly, but I skimmed through them. But she also had the fact that you had posted in the Kislev connection the other night with the number of words in Miketz having a connection to Hanukkah, you know, that was the first time that I remembered hearing that fact. Maybe, like I say, you may have taught it before. But anyway, just basically in her teaching, she basically was doing what we do for our Rosh Kodesh connection. And that's, she had that particular scripture about women in it. So, and I didn't remember that scripture either. I'm finding it a little more difficult to read the other books of the Bible since we're so much into Zohar. So I'm kind of feeling like I'm beginning to forget specific scriptures or where a certain scripture is, you know, so I'm going to have to find a balance in there. But anyway, I heard that was in her lesson. So I think that's interesting that you mentioned it. And in her teaching, she mentioned what you had mentioned, you know. So I thought, okay, so theirs is a ladies' Rosh Kodesh meeting once a month. But basically what we're doing with our Rosh Kodesh, with the teleconference, you know, we're basically getting the same information, the same, you know, just in a different form. So I thought that was neat.
I understand. The if you look at the news reporting, it seems like there are groups of women encircling the men when they are doing something inappropriate. The women are standing up as a group. And that is really one of the tools that women have that men do not have. men think in terms of themselves and defeating what's around them. Women think in terms of groups. They merge with each other. They communicate with each other. And in many marriages, that is the conflict, because the woman is looking for her husband to communicate like a woman does, and the man doesn't understand that, and they get into these discussions, arguments, and so forth. But that is part of the growth of the moon growing to the level of the sun, because the feminine tool of communication, of bonding together, of feeling each other, sensing each other, this is a tool that all of us need to work as part of learning what unity truly is. And so the answer to your question is yes, the work we do in Shovavim of doing teshuvah for sexual immorality, for sexual mistakes, has revealed a light in this area of the Yesod. And now what is coming forth is this encircling of the feminine, encircling the male. And, you know, you'll have diehards, the people on the wrong side of history is the current phrase. You'll have them, striving to distance themselves from this and trying to defeat it with the male approach, which is deny, deny, deny. But the truth will always come out, and in today's world it comes out faster than any other previous generations.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way I see what's going on. And when, in a few weeks after Hanukkah, in the middle of probably the early part of January, we'll start Shovavim again, and we'll do the work again, because it's something that needs to continue.
Mm-hmm.
As people are announcing on the television and the news sections, you know, it's a watershed moment. Things are changing. And others are saying, yes, they're changing, but you're not sure if they're changing. And, you know, we need to keep it up. It's the same reason that we are saying the verses from that connect to the previous years,
right.
And especially the verse about peace in the Middle East. And I thank you for that suggestion, Hannah, when we first went into this 5775. We started in 5774, and when the peace didn't happen, I wasn't sure what to do, and your suggestion was well meant and well taken, and we've been doing all of the years since. And
because we're
making that connection, you know, and I have seen it in the few weeks sometimes where we miss saying the verse, and there would be rockets going over into the southern part of Israel. But whenever we're strong in our connection and in our feeling about saying those verses, it has its impact, and the world is safer because of it. And this is true in all of the verses that we say every day. And, you know, on one hand, new people don't understand why we do that. Oh, I don't understand the Hebrew. Why are you saying these verses? Can I read them anyway? What is that whole thing? And there's a lot of depth to what's done in those verses. But this is the issue. And I will also mention one thing, and I appreciate your issue about keeping things in balance, and that you're feeling that your time with the Zohar is so overwhelming. And I don't mean to tell you, no, don't do that. If you feel the need to be reading and studying other sections, that's fine. You do what your intuition tells you to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what the sages have made very clear, and at the bottom of the last section in every weekly email, and we did classes more extensive than what's there, the sages are very clear. In the final generation, our generation, we have to reveal the light of the Zohar through our study of the Zohar. That, yes, we may not know the verses from the Tanakh. We may not have commentary from the other sages who didn't comment on the Zohar. But in our generation, this is the tool that we have to use. And so when you are drawn away from it, in my opinion, and I'm saying this very clearly, follow your intuition, but verify that your intuition is not coming from Satan.
Okay.
And I can tell you, I trust your intuition for what you know about yourself. So I'm just giving you the general sense of why do I spend so much time on the Zohar? We have roughly 12 classes a week. And three of those classes are Zohar. Saturday night, Thursday night, and Tuesday night. And then we have the additional Noach classes, which is four classes. So 7 out of the 12 classes are Zohar. But we're also talking about other things all the time. So the balance is there in our classes. Because without the balance, we go off the wrong side. But the emphasis, from what the sages have taught us, the emphasis needs to be on the Zohar. And the sages, they make statements that, we can't verify. Statements like, an hour of Torah study is... An hour of Zohar study is equivalent to a year's study of the Tanakh. We can't verify that. But the essence of it, if you look into your intuition, you ask the question, whether it's a dream question or you just are having that internal conversation, you'll get the answer that that's true. They didn't just make up these statements. They were intuitively given. They were connected through their Ruach HaKodesh to make that statement, to write it down, and for us to have it available to us to reinforce why it's necessary to spend 7 out of 12 classes on the Zohar. Does anyone have any other questions?
I do, Hanok. I've been here since the beginning. I guess you missed my voice. I had sent you a letter or a note of what the questions were. Did you get it today?
I didn't.
It's attached to your parsha, the Yetzer, at the end.
Yes, I got it, but basically I didn't have time to respond because of the... My family's in town, and I've been spending a lot of time with them.
I understand that. I just want, that's why I called tonight. This is Go
If you want to ask the question, yes, if you want to ask it one at a time, you want to read it, or if you want to ask it in a different way, however. But go ahead, Brahma.
Okay, that's why I called. You wrote in your commentary right there at the end, and you had said, if you use these three words, which is Nekudim, Akudim, Berudim, with certainty, you receive the energy of leaving your past negative actions that create your chaos in this lifetime. Okay, first question. If repeated daily, meaning the three words, without certainty, will this still work in releasing the past negative energy created in this lifetime?
The answer is no.
Would you repeat
okay,
the question?
Nothing manifests. Hana, what are you asking?
She's asking for a repeat.
A question.
I'll read the question, please. If repeated daily.
Let me paraphrase the question.
Okay, go ahead.
On the weekly emails for the last year, and even now, I'm planning to continue it this next year. We have those three words: Akudim, Nekudim, Berudim. That are the words that are in this parasha. And a few months ago, Hana was asking where, I think it was the word Berudim, because we couldn't find the word in the parasha.
Mm-hmm.
But the commentary in the Kabbalistic Bible is very clear. Those are the three words that the story in the Vayetse is Jacob takes the flocks of that belong to Laban that he has tended now for close to 20 years. And he hasn't really been compensated for his effort, for his time in that sense. And they arrive at an agreement where any animal, goat, lamb, the herd that Jacob has responsibility for, the streaked ones, the dotted ones, the miscolored ones, are usually they're not looking for the word. It'll come to me. Those are the animals. When it comes to genes and DNA, you have a dominant gene or a recessive gene, and these terms. Nekudim, Akudim, Berudim. These terms are literally the tools that do gene surgery. And what happens, what Jacob did, was he put sticks that had dots and streaks on them above the feeding troughs of the animals. Of course, this is the story. But what the Zohar reveals is that those three words affect the DNA. So by repeating them, we are affecting the DNA. And when does that actually take place? It takes place on Yom Kippur. As we discussed that at the Nila prayer, we are able to reach cosmic Bina, which is the energy store, which is where the light is stored until the world that is coming manifests. And that light allows us to set the DNA of our year. Now, I'm using the word DNA, but what does DNA mean? It means the seed level. It means the potential that can manifest. So if we understand Rosh Hashanah, you are judged. And then on Yom Kippur, it is sealed. What is the meaning of those phrases and those terms? Your year is set. How much money you will receive, how much joy and happiness you will receive. And the only thing that isn't set is how much you will spend on Shabbat, because that's not included in what's there. That's not included in the total. Whatever you spend on those things gets added. Now, in our physical world, most people will say, well, I have X amount of money. You know, I can't really afford to bring people into to a long table on Shabbat, as we were recommended that we do. And it seems like I'm rambling, but I'm really not. The DNA of our year is set on Yom Kippur. What will manifest in our life depends on what we do during the year. And by saying these three words repetitively, we are changing our consciousness. We are going to that seed level and using the push buttons of Nikudim, Akudim, Berudim. These push buttons, like the push buttons on a TV remote control that allows you to change the station. This is what we are able to do. The fact that we say it, that we take these the time to say it, is a form of binding by striking. Why is it a form of binding by striking? Because it goes against human nature. Human nature says, I have to understand why I'm doing it, at least in the modern generations. Maybe in superstitious times past, people would do it because of superstitions. Now we're modern. We need to have an intellectual understanding. In today's generation, saying something as silly, quote-unquote silly, as Nikudim, Akudim, Berudim, we are pushing the button on a gene splicer, on a surgeon scalpel that is going into our own DNA and changing it. But what is the tool that manifests it? What is the tool that gives it energy? That tool is certainty. So the question that was asked, if I just say these words, will it just happen? And the answer is no. You have to say it with conviction. You have to say it with focus of your attention. You have to say it with certainty that it will change your DNA.
And I was working on that verb, you know, right at the time, or just before Hurricane Harvey was supposed to hit here. And I packed it in a bag because I didn't want to lose what I had worked on. You know, it was the verse and taking the first letters and the last letters. And I was to the point where I was matching the Zadokim, the 72 names, and the 72 names of the Zadokim. And I didn't want to lose what I had worked on so far. And I have yet to unpack that bag. So I'm glad you're bringing it up, because it's bringing back to me the memory, and I'll get back on it so we can, because that would also increase our certainty. That was kind of the reason why I asked my question, because I felt like when we see the results of what we're doing, like, for example, the show Ravine things, that it builds our certainty that the tools are working. And even though we know they're working, when you do see the evidence, it just boosts you as well to, you know, to keep persevering. And because as women, you know, we have so many jobs to do and so many, I call them interruptions, but they're really life. You know, it's just life. Like this afternoon, I had my friend who came who has Alzheimer's, and I couldn't come on the mini Zohar class because of it. But that's life, you know. So I think it does increase our certainty. And so I'll unpack that bag and get to work on it again. So I'm glad you brought it up, Braca. Thank you. I remember that day that she was the one that told me exactly where the verse was. I remember she told us where it was. And that helped me get started. And then you helped me know why that wasn't the word that was there. You know, it was a different word. So, and I think I was on going off on a wrong step because I thought one of the Shiluv methods was you could put both the beginning letter and the ending letter together, and you told me no, that I shouldn't do that. So,
right.
Step by step, we'll get it. So thank you for asking that question.
Rabbi, you want to move on to the next section, or do you want to stay with this and expand on it with questions?
Well, I want to finish out my questions, but I just need clarity, though. When you say certainty, are you speaking about trust and faith? That just helps me, if that's what you mean.
No, I don't mean trust.
Okay, so are you just saying that you...
May I finish?
Yeah, go ahead.
There are three categories, for lack of a better term, dealing with this level of focus of our attention. One is emunah, which is faith.
Right.
One is bidachon, which is trust. It's a higher level than grace. It's a higher level than faith. And the third level, the highest level, is vadai, certainty. So yes, you have to go through faith, trust, to get to certainty. But don't confuse yourself by thinking that when you've reached a level of trust, you've reached the level of certainty. It's not. There's a higher level. Certainty is the ability to focus your attention in such a strong way that there is no interference from any other thought. And when you have that ability of meditative focus, you can utilize the Hebrew letters to create physical things out of the air. We have discussed, and I know you haven't been on the classes for this, Bracha, but we have discussed this idea that there is three levels having to do with mind and matter. The first one, the lowest level, is mind and matter. And this is where mind, the consciousness of the person, is separated from the physical reality that they are perceiving, the matter that they see or hear or touch. The next level up is mind over matter. And this is what people have thought of over the centuries. Mind over matter is what you think is what happens. And you can attribute it to coincidence, or you can recognize that your mind has made that happen. there's a concept in psychology and psychiatry called lucid dreaming, where in the middle of your dream, you direct your dream so that the outcome of the dream is the way you want it to be. This is mind over matter. This is a level of Vedai. And then there's a higher level where mind is matter, where you think and it happens. There's no space between the thought and the result, between the cause and the effect. So this idea of certainty is necessary. It's a strength of mind. It's a strength of meditative effect, where nothing from the outside, because everything physical has space. Our scientists are telling us that our atoms have more space relative in size than a football field. There's more space in the quantum level, the subatomic level, than there is in the physical. But everything in the physical world has space. Now, what is space? It's distance, but it's separation. If there is a space between me and you, because I know you're in Salt Lake and I'm in Atlanta, there's a space of 2,000 miles as an estimate. That space is distance, but that space represents separation. Since everything physical has space, it means that everything physical has separation. And separation, by definition, by understanding, by every level you can think of, separation means the ton. It means the negative system. So everything physical is connected to Satan. And anytime you use a physical tool, you are connecting to Satan. Now, all of Judaism uses in every ritual physical things. You use a candle for Havdalah, a candle for Shabbat, a cup of wine for Kiddush. Every ritual prayer, you're holding a siddur. Everything is got some connection to Satan. Certainty separates, uses a scalpel to separate that time, that separation, that space from what you are doing. Now, do you want to go on to the next question, or is there still more here?
Next question, but thank you for the explanation because it gave me more clarity that I was seeking. Okay, second question in regards to these three words, all right, that you recommend for us to repeat, uncertainty. Okay, question is, will this also diminish or eliminate the negative energy that's part of one's tikkun work that was created from the previous lifetime? Is that what's going on?
Yes.
Okay, then the third question.
That's a simple answer. Yes, because what your tikkun work is to correct mistakes. What is the mistake? You've let Satan into your life. You've done something that has transferred the energy that you were to receive for doing a positive action, and you gave it to Satan because the action wasn't positive, it was negative. And that's the same idea if we use in the basic classes. if you have a small child throwing a tantrum in the middle of the aisle at Walmart, and you know the mother is trying to quiet the child, or the father, whoever is in charge of the child at that moment. And so, if that person gives a putsch on the tuchus, a small tap to just get the child out of the tantrum, is it a positive action or is it a negative action? The physical action is the same, but the consciousness of the person is different. If the consciousness of the person is concerned that other people are thinking of them as a horrible parent, that action is called a negative action. But the energy that was given to that person to do that action gets transferred to Satan because their consciousness was negative. But if they're thinking that what they're doing this to get the child out of the tantrum and to teach the child you can't have a tantrum, that it's not good manners, that it's not adults to have a tantrum, then it's a positive action and they receive that energy and it's given to them and it's waiting for them in Bina, in that Sephirah Bina, in the world that is coming. So it's a simple answer to say yes, but it's much more involved, as I've just discussed.
True. Well, let me ask you this, though, for clarity for me. And that is, I understand that whatever you chose to do in a previous life, that was, let's say, you perpetuated by you making a choice, that when you come back into the next world, I mean, back into this world, you become the one to receive it as a victim. You become the victim instead of being the perpetrator. Am I understanding that dynamic of how we learn here?
I don't understand the concept you're presenting because there is no victim. There is only cause and effect.
True, but I look at it as...
How you
okay.
May I finish?
Yeah, I'm not interrupting.
How you feel about cause and how you feel about effect, primarily how you feel about effect, that feeling needs to be controlled. That feeling is an illusion because it changes. So you can choose to feel that you are a victim. You can choose to feel you are a survivor. You can choose to feel that you are a victor. And I don't know how many other words I could insert into that feeling. But those feelings are all related to the same physical action. They're just our perceptions of what that action, what the effect of that action is. But nothing happens without consciousness. And what that consciousness is at the level of our unconscious mind. And so what we are striving to do through the Kabbalah is expand the conscious so that more of the unconscious becomes revealed, and we can now call that additional unconscious that has been revealed conscious. So getting back, I'm not understanding this idea of a victim. What you did in your last lifetime was a negative action. If it was a positive action, you wouldn't have come back into this world. There would be no need for you to come back into this world. you'd be waiting for the world that is coming. You'd be waiting for Mashiach to manifest. So the only thing in life is those negative actions from our last lifetime that we have to correct. How we feel about those negative actions, because we are going to be presented with those same negative actions or the potential for those actions. We're going to be presented with the ability to do those actions again and again and again and again until one time we get it right, where our mind consciousness is positive when we do the action. Go ahead with your next question.
Okay, next question. When you refer to past negative actions, you probably already answered, but I'm going to say the question anyway. Are you implying it will remove one's fears, anger, shame, guilt, or self-rejection on an emotional level that one experiences when self-control is a real challenge here? That's my question.
The seven lower sephirot represent emotions.
Right.
Emotions. So, and those emotions need to be controlled. What does control mean when it comes to an emotion? And one, the easiest emotion for us to understand the control aspect is anger. We all have gotten angry in our lifetime. Something irritates us, and our reaction is anger. Is it justified? Is it valid? Anger always relates to our ego being hurt. So if we understand that, we know that we have to change that aspect of our ego. Now, is ego bad? Ego is what makes us ourselves. If we have no ego, we have no goal. We have no self-perception. We have no image of ourselves without an ego. And at the same time, the paradox is that your ego is what separates you from the Creator. I get angry, God forbid. How do I control that? Well, one way of controlling it is that I just swallow that anger. I don't do the action, but I seethe inside. Have I controlled the anger? No. But it's better than if I acted on the anger and hit somebody. So I have improved somewhat if last lifetime I hit somebody and this lifetime I just seethe inside. But what does control of anger look like? It looks like when I am presented with a situation where my ego has been hurt, I say thank you to the messenger, whether that's an animal, a human, a spiritual entity, a physical item, whatever item has caused me to react with anger, and I say thank you for helping me overcome that anger. That's control. It's very difficult level to reach. But just because it's difficult to reach does not mean we should not strive for it. Because as you understand it, with consciousness, if I don't know that that's the goal, I'll never reach it. I'll only reach the level that I'm thinking about. And this is the major problem between philosophy and Torah. Because Torah, I am reading the wisdom of human beings. And that's a phenomenal level of wisdom. Buddhist teachings, phenomenal level of wisdom. Some of the philosophers of the 1700s and 1800s, phenomenal level of wisdom. But it's not the highest possible level of wisdom. And if all I am connecting to is that wisdom, then I do not connect to Torah. I do not connect to the wisdom level that God has set for us to reach. Next question.
Hanok, I wanted to ask you for clarity. What I understand and what I experience is that emotions cannot, how do I put it this? Okay, with emotions, they're messengers. So when you feel the emotion without acting on it, but you feel it, you've received the message, and then the beauty of it is that it takes you to the root of what the mindset is, which is the statement you're saying that brings up the emotion. So basically, working with the emotions in the mind.
That is correct. That is binding by striking. That's the step two of binding by striking. That's the internal conversation. You stopped the reaction. And you are delving into why do you feel that way? Why you feel that way, why you react that way, is in the unconscious level, the unconscious mind.
Well, what I understand,
I'm listening.
It's not what I understand, it's what I know and what I experience, is that once you release the emotion, you identify the emotion, and you hook it up to the intellect of what the statement is, that's when you have the ability to correct the statement by turning it around in a more positive or effective way that will help your life become more balanced. I know it works because that's what I experience. That's where the ownership comes in. So when you were saying to me that you can control the emotions, I'm sorry, I will disagree. You have to accept the emotion and release it because it's just messengers of energy that need to be released, but it's giving its information. And once you understand the process, that's what I understand. So anyway.
The vocabulary you're using is different than the vocabulary I'm using, but we're saying the same thing.
Okay, well, good. I just needed that clarified.
Okay.
You've already answered all my three questions. But what I really wanted to know was that by saying these three terms, and you do it for a year, and you do have the conscious focus, then you're saying that it will, are you saying that when we do this, is actually loosening the impacted energy that can be very dense, especially if it's dark, because dark energy can have that kind of weight on you. It's going to loosen it and dissolve it, you know, like you put a Pepto-Bismol pill in water and it just dissolves. Is that the action that's going to be taking place? Do you know? Or have you experienced that?
The answer is what you need to have experienced in your level of consciousness, in your level of DNA, will happen. So if that's what you need to have happen, that's what will have happen. If that's what you want to have happen, but it isn't what you need to have happen, then it won't happen. But what will happen is what you need in that year, the energy of that coming year. That's what takes place on Yom Kippur, on the 10 days of Teshuvah.
Okay,
so that
doing
it every day this year, we're talking about changing it next year. Can we change it? Can we go back to this past Yom Kippur and change it at that level? The answer is, up until Hanukkah, yes.
Okay.
But after Hanukkah, no.
Okay.
Why Hanukkah? The answer is, the essence of Hanukkah is the Organuz, the light that was created on the first day of creation in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 and verse 3.
Okay.
That is the light that is the light of Hanukkah. It only comes out for the 8 days of year. The rest of the year, it's not available.
Right.
But when it is available, that light, there is no darkness anywhere in the world when it comes out and when we connect to it and we utilize it properly. Of course, to utilize it properly, you have to be on the level of consciousness of a Kabbalist, meaning that you are on the level of certainty, at the highest level of certainty, because just saying the word certainty, there's also levels within that.
That's what I said.
Your ability to utilize that light, the darkness, wherever the darkness is in the world, wherever the darkness is in you, will be gone.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to ask one more thing, and then I'll stop asking. Anyway, on the DNA, are you focused on mainly on your character traits of what you need to correct? Is that a clarity that I think is going on, and what I understand to move our training information for self-discipline? Is the DNA really the character trait that you're trying to correct?
Yes, the character traits are what we are trying to correct.
Okay.
What we are trying to change, because those character traits were put into our physical DNA as part of what we would learn and absorb and take on as part of the society, the family that we were born into, the society that we were raised in. All of these things affect our character trait. And there's a deeper level that is referred to as personality trait, which is harder to change. But that's also changeable.
I thought the personality could not be changed. It's just who basically you are. You're just maturing in the character traits, what you've come here to acquire in your conscious level as you're elevating.
Who you are is a garment that you wear in this physical world. And since it's a garment you're wearing in this physical world, it has space within it. It's connected to Satan. The soul comes from Hashem. There is no Satan in Hashem. So Hashem will lower itself to give us the illusion that Hashem and Satan are equal. But in truth, at the higher level, Hashem is only light. There is no Satan. And so even personality can be changed once you realize it's a garment.
Okay, I can accept that. All right. I won't say anymore. There's others who want to ask questions. Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
You're welcome. Thank you for the questions. They're very helpful for not just for you, but for me and for everyone who's listening and who will listen on the recording.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions?
Physical defects. That's what I was I said I thought it also was applicable to connection to the DNA from also physical defects, because that's what I was focusing on.
Yes, it can. You can. The physical defect does not happen without a spiritual cause.
Right.
Right.
So correct the spiritual cause, you correct the physical defect.
Okay, I also remember
there is a process.
Ahead.
You correct the spiritual cause immediately. Then there is a process while the physical world attunes itself to the spiritual. So when the spiritual changes, there's a process for the physical to change. So if somebody has lost a limb and they've determined the cause of that, the spiritual cause of that loss of limb, then they do the teshuvah, they change the spiritual cause of the loss of the limb. But in the physical world, we do not expect to see that limb grow back in a day. We expect to see it go through a process of growth. You see what you expect to see. You hear what you expect to hear. And that is the limitation of why the physical does not change at the same rate, so to speak, for lack of a better term, than the spiritual changes. Change your consciousness, you change the spiritual.
Right.
Change your consciousness so that you no longer limit the physical to need a process, and it happens overnight. To my knowledge, no human being has been able to do that, except maybe Moshe, and I'm not sure at that level. I've not heard any of the Kabbalists tell me that. But maybe I haven't heard it because I don't expect to hear it.
Well, I was thinking in terms of a defect in one of the chromosomes that's in our family. But
a defect in a chromosome is a defect.
I'm sorry,
but the chromosome is in the four phases. We've mentioned this a couple of times, but it's very hard to absorb. As you go from world to world, from level to level, there must be something that has attributes of both levels. The example that we give is to go from the level of the rocks and the streams and things that are physical. I don't want to say material level, but you know what I'm talking about, I hope. To go from that to the level of plant life is a coral. Because a coral is a living entity, the living plant, but when it dies, it creates this rock. So the coral is a plant that has attributes of both. It's different than the plant that grows on land. It's different from seaweed. The coral is this level that that has attributes of the rock, and it has attributes of plants. Now, how do you go from a plant to an animal? Well, the Zohar has said in one of its stories, it describes that there is a dog-like creature that has a root, like it has a umbilical cord that grows from the ground, like a plant grows from the ground. But it's an animal that can move to the length of its umbilical cord. Supposedly, that animal is in Australia, but it's never been seen in physical science. Nobody has ever wrote about this animal. You can't find it on a Google search. But it is written in the Talmud, and it is written in the Zohar. And Rabbi Ashlag describes it. So maybe it's an entity in a different dimension. I'm not sure. But as you go from one level to the next, from the plant to the animal, it has attributes of both. It's mobile like an animal, but it's fixed into the ground like a plant. Plants are mobile, they follow the sun, but they can't move. And each of these things is describing levels of consciousness. Each of these things is describing a desire to receive. A greater desire to receive is owned or is the nature of an animal over a plant. And a plant is a greater desire to receive over than a rock. But now you go from the animal to a human, which the Talmud and the Zohar describe as speaking. They don't say human, they say the speaking world. Well, monkeys speak, they have languages, dolphins have languages, whales have languages. So this is, see, in modern science has not yet been clearly defined. But the Torah, the Talmud, the Zohar are saying that the creature that is has attributes of both the speaking world and the animal world is the monkey. It has an opposing thumb. It has a voice box. It has a minimal vocabulary. But these are the definitions that come out of the Torah. This is the understanding. Science has different vocabulary, but it's essentially moving towards the same idea. So to change the physical DNA, to change the chromosomes so that they don't happen, we have to do the teshuvah on the spiritual level so that the scientists will be able to have revealed the light that will, the idea will go off in some scientist or group of scientists' mind, and all of a sudden they'll know how to change the DNA and the chromosome at that level. You're already seeing that discussion coming into the worldview about cancer. They're using techniques that it's not chemotherapy anymore. I don't remember the word that the television tells us it is. But for certain types of chromosomes, certain types of genes that cause certain types of cancer, they are able to introduce a chemical into the body that changes those genes of the tumor, and it shrinks. So these chromosome gene surgeons are coming. If they haven't already been here, and I'm just not aware of it. Any other questions?
I do remember before you began to put the three words in the commentary for the DNA change, that there was also one of the foods on the Passover table that had to do with changing DNA, because that was where I first saw it in your materials, you know, in your commentaries and all, your teachings. I think maybe it might have been with parsley, but I'm not absolutely sure. I know I always write the foods and what the corrective is and put it on the, you know, I bring it with, I put it on my Seder table to be able to really focus on it each time, you know, we eat one of the foods. Okay, I'm finished.
The change that takes place on Passover is the Seder plate, the seven items that you inject the consciousness of the seven Sephirot. But you're dealing literally with the area of conflict only. You're not dealing with physical, you're dealing with physical wars because that's conflict. You're dealing with family fights because that's conflict. You're not dealing with physical health per se, which I think you're implying or hinting at or thinking that I had once said. And if I did, then I don't remember saying it, and I want to clarify it. Each month has a particular energy that we deal with, and the way we understand those things has to do with which holiday. From the study of the holiday, the understanding of the rituals, we're able to make those connections. So on Passover, we bring the Paschal sacrifice. We bring the Chagigah sacrifice. And if you look at the Talmud in the book of Chagigah, that's where the story of the four sages who went into the upper worlds, and one died, and one went insane, and one became a heretic, and only Rabbi Akiva entered and exited in peace. So we are talking about changing the DNA in Passover, but primarily dealing with conflicts. Now, each month has its own DNA change that needs to take place. Another way of understanding the energy of the months is to think of it as a mikveh that is cleansing a particular energy. But these are all metaphors to understand. Until you get into the details and into the specifics, as we've been talking on the advanced reincarnation, we're talking about the difference between general and particular, general and specific.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this is, everything we do, is you begin to see how it's all unified.
Right.
Any other questions? I hope you all enjoyed this class, because I enjoyed answering the questions. They were really very helpful tonight.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Hanok. Enjoy your Thanksgiving.
You too. Everyone have a wonderful Thanksgiving and a happy holidays. And think about the people who are not able to have a sumptuous Thanksgiving meal and how we can change ourselves so that we will help them be able to achieve that tomorrow, or God forbid, have to wait till next year. Let's bring Mashiach tonight. Shalom to all.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.